serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with World War II Marine Corps veteran and Purple Heart recipient Carl Appel. He grew up near Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but for nearly four decades now, he's made his home on California's Central Coast. Back in February of 1945, Carl was wounded while serving in a machine gun squad with the 3rd Marine Division on Iwo Jima. The bullet just missed his head, ended up going through his foot in the area of his heel and ankle. And while the battle continued for another month on that small volcanic island, Carl was recovering from what you heard him call his million-dollar wound.
Well, I'm just guessing, but I imagine you probably also saw a lot of guys who were in worse shape than you were.
Oh, very much so. Well, there was one young man that had quite a wound in his leg. Another young man had opened his mouth to yell and had a bullet go right through his jaws without injuring anything, without hitting his teeth or anything. So you talk about lucky, he certainly was. It knocked him out. But then he came to and ended up on the same ship that I was for medical aid.
And how long were you on the hospital ship? How long were you in the hospital period? How long was it before you could walk normally again?
Well, the ship that we were on, when it was had its full load, so to speak, we headed back to Guam, and I was in the hospital there for about a month. Then, after being released from the hospital, I went back to my division and my outfit, who had they'd returned from Iwo at that time, and I joined my old outfit again. And I developed a coral infection in the scar tissue, the wound on my heel, and as a result of that, it caused what they call a keloid condition, which resulted in me being not combat efficient, so I was then transferred to the personal effects section, and until I had enough points built up to return to the States.
So when I asked you how long it was till you could walk normally again, was that a trick question? Is the answer never? I mean, is this something that has bothered you to some extent ever since?
Well, to a point, I can walk okay. But that, of course, that scar tissue can break open quite easily, even now.
And when you say they put you into the personal effects section, I'm sure there's some old Marines listening who know exactly what you're talking about. And there are a lot of other people who say, hey, what does that mean? And I don't think that was probably a very pleasant job either. What did you have to do there?
Well, actually, it wasn't too bad of a job, but I was really responsible for making up a bill of ladings for the personal effects of deceased Marines, plus those that were just being transferred back to the States. So I was responsible for that.
And you mentioned returning to your unit, the same outfit that you had trained with, that you had deployed with. But I'm just guessing, I imagine there were some guys who weren't there anymore, who had been wounded like you or even killed.
Well, in our initial machine gun squad, we had 100% casualty, but no what we term KIAs, or killed in action. Every one of the original squad was wounded, but we didn't lose anyone, which is very unusual.
Very unusual. And how many guys in your squad?
I believe, if I remember correctly, about 7. And like I say, I saw several of them get wounded before I did. And like I say, fortunately, none of us were killed of the original squad.
And when you're sitting in that hospital on Guam for a month, what was going through your head? Were there questions that would roll through your mind? Uncertainty about the future? Thoughts of Flo back home, if you're ever going to marry her? What were the kinds of things that you were spending your time thinking about?
Well, I was thinking about, quite frankly, a lot of the wounded that were in there were, you know, quite serious. And so I was, of course, concerned about them. Something that sort of alleviated a lot of the worries, we had a very attractive nurse in our particular section. And so we just loved to talk to her. And sort of an aside story to that, she had recently been married. And while I was in the hospital, this one day she came in with this nice-looking young man, Air Force, and she came up and introduced us to her husband. And he was in a fighter squadron and in the process of going to Iwo. And so the base arranged for them to have a little cabin or tent for themselves. Then he went on over to Iwo. Oh, I don't know, it was a couple of days later. We saw all the nurses by the nurses station, and they're talking and crying. We wondered what that was all about. And so one of the nurses came by, and we asked her what was going on. And she said, well, that the nurse that we liked so well, her husband, had been killed on Iwo. The Japanese had a, well, I guess they'd call it a bonsai attack, and they attacked the tent sections for these flyers. This nurse's husband had escaped to begin with and got into a Jeep and was ready to drive off, and he saw one of his buddies that was having a problem with his, so he ran back to help him, and that's when he was killed. She was able to, they gave her permission to go home with his body. So that was a real sad thing for all of us that knew this gal. She was just a sweetheart. And I've thought many times to try to contact the Nurses Association to try and find out who she was, but in all probability she's gone now anyway.
I bet you can still remember her face.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, in fact, when they first took me into our ward, I was on this stretcher, and as they took me into the ward, I looked up, and here's this beautiful gal in white, and like a guardian angel, of course.
Well, and speaking of beautiful angels, did you get any letters while you were in the hospital from your fiancé back home?
Yeah, we did get some mail. Of course, the telegram that my parents got telling about the wound, that was quite a shock to everybody back home, of course.
Well, eventually you got to come home, and you got to see her again, and you got to marry her, not to mention 71 years with her. Do you remember that moment of getting back home and seeing her and seeing your family again?
Well, I had deliberately not broadcast when I was coming home to Pittsburgh. And I thought, well, I'll, you know, surprise them. So anyway, the train pulled into the station, and I got out. And who's down there to meet me but my mother and Flo? And somehow they'd found out when I guess the base where I was discharged sent a notice to them that I was going to be discharged in such and such a date. And they figured out what train I'd probably be on, and there they were. What a pleasant surprise that was.
Well, and in all the years since the war, I know that you've done a lot. You spent 27 years of your life with the Fullerton Fire Department in Southern California. But everywhere I look at your home here on the Central Coast, I see a Marine Corps globe and anchor. So I'm thinking you're the guy who personifies that once a Marine, always a Marine. What does that mean to you, to be a Marine?
Well, it's really hard to explain to a person unless they've been through it. Because boot camp, man, they take you down to nothing and then rebuild you the way they want you. And so, like I say, unless someone has gone through that, they just can't appreciate the esprit de corps that the Marine Corps has. I don't mean to demean any other services, but I think the Marines have the closest tie-in of any of the other services.
Yeah, that brotherhood is strong. You mentioned earlier that you went back to Iwo Jima for the 50th anniversary of the battle. So this is 1995 we're talking about. What did you do there? What did you see? And what did it mean to you?
Well, of course, we flew in. They took us by truck to, well, I guess first of all, to Suribachi. And so we got to get to the top of Suribachi and see the memorial up there. And then later that day, they had a joint service with the Japanese. They had a presentation of flags and so forth, which was quite moving for all of us. Then after that, we continued a little tour of the island. We got to see into some of the caves and enforcement that they had. Then later in the day, they flew us back to Guam. But it was certainly a, how shall I use it, gut-wrenching day, because you remembered all the sad things, and also there were some good things, too, that came to mind.
Well, and I don't know where all you went on your little tour, but did you ever get close enough that you could see the spot where you'd been hit?
No, quite frankly, it. For one thing, over the period of years, the vegetation had grown back, whereas when I was there, everything was just barren. Yeah. All the shelling and everything had just knocked everything down. Airfield 1, where we'd gone for the first night, was no longer in existence. But Airfield 2 was. We did drive by it, but I couldn't really determine where it was that I'd been hit on, as far as the location on the field.
You know, I often ask vets if they've been to Washington, D.C. to see the National World War II Memorial. But in your case, I wonder even more, have you been to Washington, D.C. to see the Marine Corps Memorial with that giant statue of the Marines lifting the flag atop Suribachi?
Well, I did see that. I went on that honor flight. We did get to see the flag-raising memorial, but unfortunately, I couldn't get in. They didn't have any facilities for me to get into the Marine base there or the Marine Museum, which I have loved to have seen.
Well, I've got two questions for you on that. At the National World War II Memorial, looking at that wall of gold stars representing 406,000 Americans who died, so many of them your fellow Marines at Iwo Jima, what did you think of when you were looking at that?
Well, it, of course, brought back a lot of memories of the guys I've associated with. I realized what the number of losses that we were, just how serious things were. It was quite an experience to go back to see that.
Was there a thought at all of, if I had been a few inches to the left, I'd be part of one of those stars?
That entered my mind also. Yeah, but the good Lord had other things for me to do, I guess.
He sure did. And at that Marine Corps Memorial with the statue of the Marines atop Suribachi, there's a famous quote from Admiral Nimitz, which is in gold letters across the side, and it says, among the Marines in the Pacific War, uncommon valor was a common virtue. Did he get that right? And what do you think about that?
I think he was right. Well, I thought a lot of him, too, that Nimitz. Yeah, I thought a lot of him, that he was quite a guy, I guess.
Well, and if there's anything else you want to share, feel free, but I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling us your story to help us appreciate that price that's been paid for our freedom. You're 93 now. I know once a Marine, always a Marine, and you're very proud of that. But what would you say in your life you're most proud of or most thankful for?
Well, I think the first thing is having such a lovely wife. I feel very, very fortunate that Flo and I were married. It's a... That was a big thing for me throughout my life. She was such a support for me and such a good mother and just very great. And I think the other thing is being a member of the Marine Corps. Things that I learned at boot camp have followed me throughout my life and has had quite an effect on me. People saying that we shouldn't have wasted all that manpower on Iwo. But here again, I revert back to the number of lives it's saved and the planes that they've saved. And anyone that sees those statistics certainly can justify taking Iwo.
And who better to vouch for that than someone who left part of himself on that island all those years ago, who still deals with foot issues as a result of his injuries there, and who will always exemplify that motto, once a Marine, always a Marine. That is Carl Appel, 93 years young. Find photos and video of Carl at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll join us again next time when we're reminded once more through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.